education is an economic issue, if not the economic issue of our time.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Alex Bloomberg.
And I'm Chana Jaffe-Walt. Today is Tuesday, January 25th, and that was, of course, President Obama, you heard at the top, during a speech to the Urban League in July.
He's apparently going to be making another speech tonight.
I've heard that too.
Yep. Today on the program, we consider a plan to dramatically grow the U.S. economy. The plan has nothing to do with banks, stimulus, tax cuts, the Federal Reserve. It is a plan that focuses entirely on public school teachers.
Public school teachers, it has long been said, are the key to America's greatness. And today, on the show, we have the numbers to prove it. That's coming up. But first, our Planet Money indicator from Jacob Goldstein.
Today's Planet Money indicator is -0.5%. The UK economy shrank by 0.5% in the last 3 months of last year, according to numbers out today. And this is really a big surprise. One economist called it staggeringly weak, the UK economy. It's been growing slowly, and economists expected that to continue.
And I've heard part of this actually has to do with the fact that basically it's been snowing.
Right, bad weather. Like, you know, you think of all these complicated things people try and do for the economy, and then snow comes in, right? You know, I guess it snows and construction crews can't go out to work and people don't go out and do as much shopping. And so it definitely does have an effect. Nevertheless, it's pretty clear that even without the weather, it would have been pretty bad still for the UK in the last 3 months of this year.
But, of course, there's something else that people have been blaming these bad numbers on, and that is the austerity measures that were recently passed in Britain.
Right. Last year, last spring, the UK elected a new government, and the big push for this new government has been to cut the deficit. Of course, we've been hearing a lot of this stimulus versus austerity debate in the U.S., and we've been hearing it in the U.K., and stimulus basically means borrow and spend more money to help the economy in the short term. Austerity basically means spend less money, you know, maybe raise more taxes, fewer deficits, even if it means we take this short-term economic hit.
And it all comes down to what you think is the worst thing for the economy. The people who really want austerity say a big debt, that's the worst thing. That's the worst drag on the economy. You got to get rid of that big debt right away. And then other people say, no, don't worry about the debt right away. There's other things that we need to worry
about. Right, we got to keep it going right now. Yeah. And it's sort of an impossible debate ultimately to resolve. I mean, in the UK, we can look in the medium term, we can sort of answer this weather question. We can say, you know, in the first few months of this year, how does GDP do? And that'll be like the sort of lowercase answer to this question. But like the uppercase answer, you know, the big answer to this question is essentially impossible to get to. It's sort of the permanent macroeconomic debate that, you know, it's kind of whatever you believe in, you can always say, well, we would have been right. If you would have done it our way, the economy would have been better.
But it is possible also that if, like, they enact this austerity plan and then the numbers are really, really bad for the next year and they don't have growth or they have, like, shrinking GDP, a lot of people in Europe will be watching that and saying, oh, man, we might want to reconsider our austerity measures here.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so, Hana, we are not done with GDP on the program today because we are talking to a guy who would say all these stimulus versus austerity debates, they're beside the point. Because really, when you're talking about GDP, what you really need to be talking about is teachers.
Yes, and that guy's name is Eric Hanushek. You talked with him, Alex. He's an economist. For over 4 decades, he's been looking at educational research in particular. And he came out with this paper recently that caught your eye. And basically, the idea of the paper is that he's trying to place a value, a monetary value, on good teaching.
He's looking through his economist's lens at this question that I have been thinking about a lot, basically ever since I was a teacher myself. What is good teaching and what is it worth?
Yeah, I always forget you were a teacher. Did you teach science?
I did. I taught 7th and 8th grade science for 4 years when I was in Chicago.
And you wondered if you were good or not?
I did wonder if I was good or not. I mean, I sort of thought I was good, but I have no way, even today, I have no idea. And that's the crazy thing, is you think you know what makes a good teacher or not, but then when you're in front of the kids, you're in the classroom, you really have no idea. And that's really profoundly strange. Like most professions, you go into them and you have some sort of metric to judge yourself. You know, like, you know, and also, you know, if you go to school, they will teach you how to do the thing. You know, you can go to engineering school and when you graduate, you'll probably know how to build a bridge that won't fall down. But if you graduate from education school, there's no guarantee you're going to be able to manage your class or teach your students effectively at all. I would see 30-year veterans who would just slam the door and scream at their kids all day. And then I'd see third or fourth year teachers who were very, very calm and their classrooms were very placid. And they would both have said, like, no, no, I'm a good teacher. This is what you need to do. And they were both doing totally different things. And there was no way to tell, like, who was right. And it turns out even experts, people who study this all the time, can't tell what makes a good teacher. Here's Eric Hanushek.
We've spent a lot of time, and this is the holy grail of much education research, is to try to find the ingredient or ingredients that lead to a really good teacher. And the research has simply failed.
It sort of makes sense why it's hard in particular to figure out what makes a good teacher. Because if you think about, like, are you going to judge teachers by grades, by how well their students do in their class? But that's something that the teacher decides. The teacher assigns grades. And I certainly had teachers who gave me really good grades and teachers who gave me bad grades for probably equal work.
Right. It's very subjective.
Right. That's super subjective. Right. So then do you judge teachers based on classroom evaluations? You go and watch them teach. Okay. Well, who's going to do those evaluations then? It's the principal, maybe. That's also super subjective. Do you do it by test scores? Well, test scores don't seem fair because, you know, one school has a bunch of kids who are much lower income, or another school has kids who are not being well fed at home, and so they're maybe not going to test as well. There's just way too many factors.
But Eric Hanushek says there is one method of evaluation. It's not perfect, but it does bypass a lot of these other problems. So here's his method. You use the test scores, but simply to measure improvement over time. So let's just say I'm a teacher, and let's say I get a kid coming into my class at the beginning of the year. They're scoring a 5 on whatever standardized test we're using in my state. So when they come into class, they're scoring a 5. At the end, they score a 7 on the same test. You can attribute at least some of that improvement to me and my excellent teaching skills.
Right. And then if every other kid in your class, in Mr. Bloomberg's class, are also showing the same year-over-year improvement, then that's even more evidence that Mr. Bloomberg is an excellent teacher. So maybe your kids, you know, would come into class reading at a slightly below grade level. But if you're really good, they could leave reading well above grade level.
Conversely, if, say, they come to, oh, I don't know, let's pull a name out of the hat, Miss Joffe Welt's classroom, they could lose ground. You know, they could come out reading below grade level. So they start at grade level, and then by the end of your class, Miss Joffe Welt's class, they're below grade level. And this kind of variation between teachers at the exact same schools, working with the exact same populations, this is very common.
A top teacher will basically get a year and a half worth of learning in an academic year. And a bottom teacher will get somewhere around half a year of learning in an academic year.
Wow.
Now, if you think about that for a minute, it says that in one academic year, one kid can be a whole year ahead of another just because he got the right teacher.
Right. And one teacher and a good teacher is getting 3 times as much learning as a bad teacher.
That's right.
And these are consistent results, right? From year after year after year, the same teachers will produce a year and a half of learning, and the same teachers produce a half of year of learning, no matter who their
students
are.
Yes, I mean,
what they're teaching, that sort of thing, right? These are consistent results.
I mean, precisely. That's been a lot of the research to make sure that they're consistent.
So Eric Hanushek says once you have this research and it shows you year over year how students are doing in one particular teacher's classroom, that's the first step towards answering the question, what is the value of a good teacher? The second step, and this is where, to me, it got really interesting, involves looking at what happens once those students leave the teacher's classroom.
And here we need to mention another piece of data that educational researchers have known and continued to verify. Higher performing students tend to earn more over their lifetimes than their lower performing classmates. So let's imagine, again, my classroom, all these kids in my class who got 7s on the standardized test. Well, let's say your kids only got 5s and 6s. On average, over their lifetimes, that means that the kids in my class who got the 7s are going to earn more money than the kids in your class who got the 5s and 6s.
They earn systematically quite a bit more particularly over their lifetime.
Right. And this, put in sort of like human terms, valedictorians tend to earn more than class clowns. But you're saying it's true no matter where you fall on the scale, on the spectrum. In other words, the person who's not the valedictorian but does get B's has a higher earning potential than the person who gets C's, and that person has a higher earning potential than the person who gets D's, et cetera, right?
Absolutely. Systematically, we find that people that have more skills, as measured by our straightforward math and science test, earn more in the labor market. They're, on average, their earnings will go up and they will stay up over their entire lifetime.
Now, obviously, this isn't true for every student. You can't apply it on an individual basis, but this is just sort of statistically in aggregate that is true. So these are the two data points that we now know. We know kids who score higher tend to earn more. We know that when people earn more, the GDP number that we talk about all the time, that gets bigger. The overall economy improves.
Because the GDP number includes how much everybody in the economy earns.
Exactly. And we know that certain teachers can get consistently higher test scores than average. And voila, that gives you one very crude monetary measure of the incredible value of good teaching.
If you think of a teacher that can move a student forward, she's worth, with a class of 25 students, over $500,000 a year in terms of added value to the economy.
Half a million dollars
each and every year that she does this with a new class of 25. She adds $500,000 to earnings and productivity in the economy.
Oh, so that's why all my teacher friends make $500,000.
Well, unfortunately for your friends, that is not how teachers are paid. And I don't want to assume anything about your friends, Hannah, but there is another side to this whole equation. The least effective teachers, teachers who start the year with kids below grade level and end up at the end of the year with the kids even further below grade level, those kids will go on to make less than they otherwise would have, right? So they're not like the kids in my class who are improving their test scores and also at least statistically their future incomes. Statistically, these kids in lower performing classes, they're having future income taken away from them. It's like they're getting demoted 10 years before they even enter the labor force just because they had the bad luck of getting an extremely poor performing teacher.
And those bottom performing teachers, they do the opposite of good performing teachers. They have a huge negative impact on GDP.
If we could replace the bottom 5 to 8% of our teachers with just an average teacher, if you project out over the next 80 years, which is the lifetime of somebody born today, and calculate what's the current value or present value of that, you get numbers that look like $100 trillion. We've had this two-year debate about the recession and a stimulus package of $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. And we're saying that there's $100 trillion still sitting on the table.
And you're saying that we could do that simply by firing the worst 5% of our teachers and replacing them with just average teachers.
That's what all of the research suggests, yes. That's the simple bottom line. Now, how we actually do that is another matter. It's not saying whether we fire teachers or we make them better. It's not saying anything about how we do it. Mm-hmm. But it just says if we could replace the bottom 5 to 8% of our teachers with an average teacher, it could be worth up to $100 trillion to the U.S. economy in added income and gross domestic product. This is a number that we ought to pay attention to, I think.
I think so. I mean, it does seem like what you're saying is sort of putting into numbers what I feel like people know on a gut level, which is that teachers and learning is the most important thing that we as a society can really be involved in. You know, it's the basis of all our wealth, of all our prosperity, pretty much. And yet, the people who do this for us are not considered, are not that valued. And what you're doing is you're putting a number on this truism that we all, I think, feel in some way or another.
Well, I think we feel that education is important. I think what these calculations do is to put it in terms that are so stark that it shocks everybody. I think there's a lot of head shaking and nodding that says, oh, yes, education is important and we ought to get on to that, without realizing how important it is for our future well-being.
Okay, so Hanushek's got clearly a very interesting idea. He's offering this method of figuring out who our worst teachers are and clearly making the argument that there's a huge benefit to identifying them and making them better somehow or replacing them. But like a lot of economic ideas, it's really nice in theory. If you take it and apply it to an actual school district, though, it becomes messy in practice.
Is it fair to publish teacher ratings? One gauge of who's good and who's not. A bitter fight today in Los Angeles about ratings publicized in the Los Angeles Times.
LA Times, bottom line, nothing but a dollar sign. LA Times, bottom line.
Taking an economic theory and putting it into practice, this is actually happening. School districts across the country are using this method of looking at year-over-year student improvement as a way of evaluating teachers. But a lot of districts are doing so very tentatively. Like in Los Angeles, which you're hearing behind us, they collected the data, but they didn't do anything with it. In fact, the LA Times actually sued the school board to get this data and then published it. They named over 6,000 teachers by name, and they put their grades, how effective they are at improving test scores year over year. And this is what happened. These protests were part of the brouhaha that resulted. People basically saw this as an unfair attack on the teachers. Like, all of a sudden, if you're a teacher, there's your name published in the paper alongside a grade that says, you know, you're average or you're less effective, or you get the worst grade, you're least effective. And that is all based on this one metric, test scores.
And I totally understand this. Like, teaching is so hard, you get paid so little, and all of a sudden there you are on the paper as if you're the enemy, you know, after years spent doing nothing but trying to educate children. And, you know, did the paper talk to you about your late night spent grading tests or your hours spent after school helping to counsel distraught teens? No, the paper did not. But that's not to say that teachers like the system that we have, you know. Ask most teachers and they will agree, I'm going to go out on a limb here, that Eric Hanushek is right, that they are undervalued. If you get a beer in them, they'll probably come up with a teacher or two that they think would be better off leaving the profession. And a lot of them say, yeah, the system is really bad at helping you know if you're doing a good job or not. There's this Washington Post education reporter, Jay Matthews. He writes this education blog called Class Struggles. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
And he quoted this email that he'd gotten from a friend of his. It's a public school teacher in California. And the guy wrote something that I think really gets to this. He wrote, quote, "In 10 years at my high school, I can honestly say I have no idea who the stars are. I know teachers who are popular among kids, and I know teachers who teach seemingly awesome lessons, but I have no objective knowledge of which teachers are producing results and which aren't. More to the point, neither I nor any teacher I work with has any idea whether or not we ourselves are producing any results compared with other teachers. In my years of teaching, neither I nor any teacher I have known has ever had a single meaningful objective evaluation of their teaching outcomes, nor have we been given the means to objectively evaluate our performance ourselves. Tell me what other profession is like this." We'll link to Eric Hanushek's paper, and also we'll put a link up to the Los Angeles Times series where they rated all the teachers, all the 6,000 teachers in Los Angeles. That'll be on our website, npr.org/money.
You can send us email at planetmoney@npr.org. You can also find us on Facebook. I'm Chana Jaffe-Walt.
And I'm Alex Bloomberg. Thanks for listening.